I'm Heather.
And I'm Corey.
And this is Movie Shelf, where we talk about movies, movie trivia, and just about anything related to pop culture. We're glad you're here. In today's episode, we're talking about the new Hellboy movie, which means we'll talk about the original Hellboy movies, which are great. And we will also have our picks of the week, and of course, we'll enjoy a side of bacon.
Bacon.
This Hellboy movie, we didn't really like it, and we'll go into a little bit more about that later. But plot-wise, this one is based on the Dark Horse comics, just like the originals. And the character Hellboy, he is essentially a demon. He's born from hell. He comes from hell, but when he was like a baby or like a toddler or something.
Technically a half-demon, but yeah.
Yes.
Demon still.
He's been raised by humans his entire life. So this is definitely a nature versus nurture case. He fights for the Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defense, which means they fight evil and monsters that are in the world. I think I liked from the original Hellboy movies, they talk about that we fight the things that go bump in the night or something like that. And
well, the way he phrases it, there are things that go bump in the night and we are the ones that bump back.
There we go. Much better than my original paraphrasing. The plot kind of twists, or I guess further develops, when an ancient sorceress, who's played by Mila Jovovich, begins to unravel her plot to take over the world. And that's kind of the basic gist of what's going on in the movie. This movie brings in the Arthurian lore.
Yes.
Which kind of, I think, I don't know, had like a little curveball feel for us as well. But I don't know if that's in the comics or not. I know that DC comics jump into the Arthurian legend and that type of thing. Maybe that's just a natural thing for the Hellboy comic series. I'm not sure.
To my knowledge, the comic book series does touch on that fact, but it doesn't dwell on it a lot.
Okay. So, starring in this film, the Hellboy, he is played by David Harbour. And I know you and I, well, at least mainly me, I don't know, was really excited for it, really hopeful. We really like him in Stranger Things. He's the sheriff. We also call him my brother's doppelganger because we think he kind of looks and has some mannerisms similar to one of my brothers.
Particularly in the way he acts in Stranger Things.
So yeah.
We don't know.
Not Hellboy.
we don't know if the actor himself acts like that all the time.
Although we were listening to him on the Chris Hardwick podcast, and you're like, he even sounds like him. So anyway, David Harbour is putting on the Hellboy mantle for this film. And Mila Jovovich, as I mentioned, she's playing the sorceress. Ian McShane plays essentially Hellboy's father in the film, the one that isn't his adopted father, the one that raises him. He's also the one that's kind of in charge of, or I don't know if he's in charge, but he's one of the leaders for the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. And then we have Daniel Day-Kim, who played the British counterpart for Hellboy.
Okay.
I didn't really recognize a lot of what he had done, but I think he's been in a lot of things we've seen. He hadn't been on my radar yet.
Yeah, just not maybe a major role in something.
Something like that. There may be a TV show that he was in, but I can't remember exactly. And then one of the other main characters was Sasha Lane. And she's kind of I don't know if it would be empath or, I'm not sure.
Or some type of a seer of sorts.
Yeah, in the film. And I guess the story there was that she had been, when she was a baby, kidnapped by fairies. So she kind of got some fairy magic at some sort. The only thing I recognized her from was a movie I just watched. And I think it's Hearts Beat Loud. And it's kind of a Nick Offerman indie kind of film. Anyway, so that's the main cast. First off, just kind of as we go into some of the things we liked and didn't like I said, we really didn't necessarily like this film. They made it rated R, and I think that they probably would have been better if they tried to lean more on the PG-13 side. I think with the rating, they tried to up some things that really didn't need to be upped. But if special effects-wise, they were pretty good. The characters looked really great, and they did have some new personalities.
I personally do not like the way that Hellboy himself looked in this movie.
Okay.
Because, you know, not to compare it, but it just fails by comparison to what I was already used to seeing him in live action.
Well, you do like the Ron Perlman Hellboy.
Well, okay, admittedly, I am a huge Ron Perlman fan in itself, so maybe there may be some biasism there, so.
So looking back at my notes, I forgot to mention one other actor that definitely was an interesting character for the film, and that was Thomas Hayden Church. And you saw him kind of when they were initially retelling part of the origins of Hellboy, and he played Lobster Johnson. He was kind of a hero of the time, I guess, that was kind of helping out. So, a little quirky. We just saw little bits of him, not a whole lot of him, but he definitely had some interesting aspects to him or quirks to him. So, going back to the effects, I thought that the digital effects looked really nice. They have giants, they have all sorts of different little characters and stuff. I'm sure a lot of it is very digital.
Yeah, the eye candy was definitely tasty.
And there are definitely some very creepy characters. There's one particular person.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Who we saw, he plays like a witch. And I think when we were leaving the theater, one of my brothers or somebody was saying, like, they wondered if this was, like, a digital person or if they really had a person doing this. And I kind of looked up to see who played the character. And when I saw who played it, and I didn't write his name down, so I apologize. But he was the person that tried out for America's Got Talent last year. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, no. That guy can do all that weird stuff.
Yes. And this would most likely be his acting debut since his...
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Trying that show, I would imagine.
But yeah, I guess if you need a weird, creepy guy that can... you have a creepy character that can change into all sorts of different poses, this is your guy. So we'll definitely put in the show notes a link to his America's Got Talent tryout, because you will definitely see some familiar moves, yes. Especially when he jumps up onto the stage, you know, right in front of Simon Cowell.
Which really freaked him out.
So my, I think, biggest issue with this film, for the most part, is that I felt like it was too on the fence. Like, it didn't quite know where it really wanted to go, because it was kind of spoofy at times, and then it was also very dramatic at times, and then it was, like, just sarcastic at times, and then we have, like, some very, like, very ridiculous death scenes, and then we have some, you know, just normal death scenes. You know, it was just kind of all over the place for me, and I think it needed to kind of focus a bit more to drive the plot a bit better. So, I don't know. I mean, I know you just didn't really kind of flat out like the movie. You were very skeptical even going into the movie. You just had no hopes for it.
Yeah, well, in the previews, I did not like the way Hellboy looked. even in the previews, so it was hard to get excited for it.
I guess, to some degree, Ron Perlman has a little bit more of a lovable...
giant.
Niceness to him, and maybe David Harbour, which he is a lovable guy. Like, you know, you do like him in Stranger Things.
I'm not putting the blame on the actor by any sense. If anything, the makeup artist or
right.
the concept creators for this particular movie.
So I guess, you know, I can see. I know you definitely really liked the original Hellboy, so I know it was really hard for you to want to accept a new Hellboy. But again, they just didn't do a super good job.
If the story was good, I would have grabbed on to it.
And I think we mentioned this before, that it just felt like a very odd connection to bring in the Arthurian lore and things like that. So again, that just felt like another weird little disconnect. Like, okay, we're going with the Sword and the Stone.
And it feels a little forced.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I had read about, that with regard to the movie, that this one, they say, at least they being people on the internet, they say that this one leans more toward, or is a bit more accurate toward, the actual Dark Horse comics or the comic books, I guess, more so than the other movies. So, I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe we just liked the other style and we're less fans of the actual comic book plot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was definitely a little odd to me, just the way they put everything together. So, very quickly, I think we already know our verdict, but I'll do it anyway. What's the verdict, Corey?
Oh, it's already forgotten on the mental shelf.
Yeah, it does not make the movie shelf. I did have hopes for it going in, but it just, you know, I enjoyed the humor. There's definitely lots of humorous parts in it. But I just, I ultimately kind of found it forgettable, just like what you just said, that it, you've already basically forgotten it.
And I love the way that the other creatures looked in the movie. The right. Giants, the little imps, and the fairies, and whether the boar creature or whatever that
was. There was all sorts of weird creatures.
There were. Yeah. And they all looked fantastic.
And that witch.
But yeah, the overall story and the way that Hellboy himself just came across just didn't do it for me at all.
I think first, to some degree, they had he had some counterparts. He had the girl and then the British guy.
Yeah.
But I feel like that maybe, I don't know.
I had a lot more enjoyment watching the British guy than I did Hellboy.
And I think part of the trio of them working together was a lot of fun. I think it just took a while to get to that trio.
Yeah.
So, and I think to some degree in the original Hellboy films, there's more of that. He's kind of always kind of with other people. It's not just him. I think I would have liked more of that. Like for this one, maybe a little bit more of the three of them working together or things like that. I know obviously they, plot-wise, they were taking it to get to that point, to get them together. But still, it was nice getting them together and watching what they could do and see. So, as we mentioned before, since we didn't like this Hellboy, we wanted to talk really about the Hellboy we love, which is the Guillermo del Toro Hellboy, or actually, the Ron Perlman Hellboy.
Actually, both of them. I mean, he did two movies. Yeah. There was the original and then the Golden Army sequel.
Right.
They were both very good.
I think the one of the signature things to me that stands out when you watch a Guillermo del Toro film are the creatures. His creatures are just amazing. I don't know his process. I don't know if he's the one designing them, because they definitely all have a signature style.
They all have a similar feel as far as how they look,
yeah.
Interestingly.
Yeah, and so it's just, that's one of the things that just really makes the films, to me, is just how cool those creatures look. So, Corey, tell us about Hellboy, and Hellboy 2 if you want, but...
Well, so Hellboy does have a similar origin story in both the original and this movie remake, but I just like how it's visually portrayed better
right.
in the first one. But
well, in the first one, it starts with the origin.
Oh, yeah, definitely from the bat. Starts out with, at the end of World War II, Hitler's, I guess, feeling like he's losing the war. So he's like creating these splinter groups to research into the mystics of the occult and the paranormal, trying to find some other source of help or power to turn the tide of the war.
Right.
And he has this one servant of, goes by Rasputin to try and conjure up some kind of a creature. Of course, while this portal is open to some of this creature, things go awry because the American and British side kind of ambush this process and it doesn't go as expected. And I think something else than what they were originally trying to conjure up comes through
mm-hmm.
said portal, which is this little infant.
Little demon boy.
Yeah, little demon baby that comes through and gets adopted by the American side, mm-hmm. the American paranormal scientist.
That was John Hurt, right?
Yes, another awesome, John Hurt, just amazing actor in anything he does, mm-hmm. including this movie. So, and I guess that this was kind of the creation of the Americans paranormal or Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defense,
mm-hmm.
And it grows from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so I think this one, it starts kind of, I guess, in the 40s, and it almost feels like that, at least the John Hurt character, he kind of always there's always that vintage feel anytime you go to where their offices are and essentially, I guess, their home.
Yeah.
Basically, you have that origin, and then we fast forward to, what could be perceived as present day, in a sense. Although present day, like 10 years ago, I guess. And they have this whole team. So you have, of course, Hellboy, or yes. They call him Red, yep. Which is played by Ron Perlman.
And I'm, again, Ron, a huge Ron Perlman fan. And evidently, Guillermo del Toro is as well, because there are quite a few movies where they're paired up together.
Yeah. So you were just looking up that you had Blade 2.
Yep, which is Blade 2.
Which Ron Perlman was one of your favorite characters there. In.
Yep.
And was it Pacific Rim they were also
yep,
in?
Yep, Pacific Rim as well. So there's obviously a little friendship there, it seems like.
Looks like.
And they do work great together.
Yeah. So John Hurt, of course, is still there as, and he's essentially Red's dad. And I feel like, doesn't Hellboy have like this affinity for cats? I feel like there's lots of cats.
Yes.
Right?
He's the crazy cat guy.
And they have Abe Sapien, which he seems to be this water god, in a sense.
Yeah. Or played by creature. Doug Jones, which is another favorite of Guillermo del Toro, almost in every movie he's done.
Although,
as well.
Wasn't it was he voiced by the guy that was Frasier's brother from the Frasier TV show?
Oh.
Wasn't he voiced by him?
So, yes, as it turns out, David Hyde Pierce does the voice of Abe Sapien, while the other guy is the physical portrayal of him.
Yeah, Doug Jones. Selma Blair, she's kind of the love interest. I can't remember. She has some sort of powers, right?
Like, well, yeah, she's like Firestarter type.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to make her angry.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if there was anyone else that...
Yeah, well, this is all done from the portrayal of the new recruit.
Right.
In the movie.
Yeah, so essentially, John Hurt, I know he has a desire to retire. I don't know if it's just retiring or if he feels like...
Well, I think he knows he has cancer, too.
Right.
So he needs to find... And I don't think he trusts anybody else in the department to, like, take over the care of Red.
Right.
Because, you know, most other people almost, like, despise him and are fearful of him and everything. So, you know, he recruits a newbie from, you know, some other government department, I guess, that he pulled files from. But it's John Myers, played by Rupert Evans.
Right.
Which, come to think, I'm not too sure of what else he's done, but...
That's okay. Yeah, so they all have to learn to get along.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, for that Hellboy, I think one of the creepiest villain-type character was that weird, the sand guy.
Like, yes.
That had a wind-up.
Yes.
he started out in the... back in the origin of everything.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think Rasputin kind of cursed him to be able to live forever.
Yeah.
So you never see his face. He's totally always covered.
You do see his face at a point.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
I just invented that we don't. Anyway, so he definitely is, he wields his sword thing really well. It's not really swords, but I forgot what they're called. But
they're like bladed police batons. So they're made and handled.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a formal name to that, but we'll go with bladed police batons. Yeah, and they're basically, there's this group that's trying to bring back, I think, Rasputin, so that they can finish doing whatever they were trying to do way back in the 40s.
In which Hellboy ends up being a key for.
So that is Hellboy. It's kind of your classic...
That is the Hellboy that we love. Yes.
Yeah, it's got your origin and then the classic good versus evil type of scenario. Of course, Hellboy still has a, you know, chip on his shoulder. You always see him. I think he really likes his gun and he likes his cigar and all those cats. Abe, he also has a little bit of that. He can, like, sense things, right?
Well, particular things that he touches and comes in contact with. Yeah, he has... His hands are very sensitive in that nature.
So I think there's a scene where they go somewhere and he can, like, sense whatever fight had been there before. Like,
yeah.
Kind of the things that took place there.
And even in some of Blair's character, there was something happened and he just kind of braces his hand on her stomach to, like, hold her back.
Mm, yeah.
And then instantly says that she was pregnant because his hand was there.
Spoiler! No. So that's Hellboy.
Well, I believe that was Hellboy 2, so...
So, do you remember kind of the plot for the second one, the Golden Army, I think, right?
Okay, now, it's been quite a while since I've seen this one,
yes,
so...
Yes, we've probably seen the first one a lot more than the second one.
Yeah, but way back in the past, you had these group of fairy tale type creatures, you know, there's all sorts of different types. One in particular is this race of these...
Fantasy
type creatures. And there's these race of creatures that are kind of, I'm going to say, kind of elvish looking.
I would go with that.
I'm not sure if they're called that in the movie. They may be called something else, but they definitely have that kind of Lord of the Rings elvish look to them. And something happened in the past where they've been driven underground and forced to live underground outside of humans for, you know, hundreds of years. And they're trying, or then the son is tired of this and he wants to...
The prince.
Yeah, he wants to reclaim their place on the surface and, I guess, wipe out humanity, I guess, to do so. And there's this ancient source of this mechanical army that was created by these ancient race of dwarves, magical dwarves. And the key to activate this army is in three pieces of this crown that was broken up.
Oh, yeah, I remember the crown. No.
So he's trying to get the three pieces of the crown together to take control. And the army can only be controlled by some sort of royalty of some manner.
Okay.
And so, yeah, he's trying to conjure up this massive mechanical army to wipe out the human race.
Good old classic, gotta save the world type plot.
And he has a twin sister that is not for that plan.
Right. She wants probably to live in harmony.
Yes.
So I think more than anything, this particular Hellboy showed such the range of, again, those creatures and characters that Guillermo del Toro just beautifully always created.
You're kind of introduced to this world of underground mythical creatures that are forced to live outside of the sight of humans. And for the few that do exist where humans can be seen, that there's some sort of disguise where they look human and so forth.
Yeah, I remember we were talking. We were just talking about that. There's those glasses. I think that's something you could wear so that you can see what the people really look like. You know, it might look like this old lady on the street, but really, it's this crazy, you know, wild looking creature. So it was definitely interesting. Of course, I know it had probably the same drama that they have, you know, just the kind of that family drama almost feel.
Oh yeah.
With their team, kind of in the midst of all this fantasy battle of all these creatures.
You get a lot more drama between Hellboy and the love interest in this movie.
Again, we didn't really like 2019 Hellboy.
No.
But we adore these original Hellboys, so we definitely recommend you checking them out. All right, Corey, it's time for our picks of the week.
Okay, my mind's going to be a little bit of a mixed bag on this one.
Well, we were a little torn on what direction we wanted to kind of go with our picks of the week this episode. So we decided to more so lean on Guillermo del Toro because he is just a very fascinating storyteller and visual storyteller as well. And for both of us, really, our knee-jerk reaction when we think of Guillermo del Toro.
For both of us.
Yeah. For both of us, is Pan's Labyrinth. So that's definitely on our list as a pick of the week. This film, I feel like it was probably another World War II time period film. Hopefully that's correct. Well, I know it was definitely a war.
Yeah.
But it's Spanish, so they're in Spain.
Yeah, and, you know, oddly, I thought I would have been very...
You're not a subtitle fan.
Yeah, not a subtitle fan, but I was not that distracted from that in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't feel like I had a hard time, you know, keeping up with the story and, you know, having to read and observe what was going on the screen at the same time. So as far as subtitle movies go, this is definitely my favorite.
I think that, I believe they were in Spain. I believe. And it's during the war, and the mother married some, like, military...
Officer, yeah.
Officer, like, high-ranking officer, but he's not really a good guy. And why the mother married him, I'm not sure.
Could be out of necessity.
It might be. She had a daughter, but the mother's pregnant with now the new husband.
Yes.
He's pretty confident it's a boy. How and why anyone would know it's a boy, I'm not sure at that time. But he's pretty confident it's a boy. And they go off with him. They're basically on like a base. I mean, it's a very small base, like wartime style military base or camp. And she's basically bedridden. And the daughter, she kind of just does her own thing. She's very upset that her mother is so sick or frail feeling. And it's almost as if I feel like it's being told as if it was like a children's story, even though it's very dark.
Yeah.
But she goes and somehow she discovers Pan.
Yeah, she goes down her own rabbit hole, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and somehow I forgot how she got told to put the weird root baby thing under the bed that was supposed to help the mother or something. Yeah. But anyway,
it was not given a chance to her because of the father.
Yeah.
So
I think it was very much a metaphorical type of film. Because you have to wonder, was the root baby ever really a baby thing? Like, it was like a creature, but only to the girl.
Yeah, well, I think it kind of makes you question, is this, in the movie, are these things really happening? Or is this a way of the girl's escape from what's happening to her?
Right. So it kind of has you dark. Yeah. You have, again, these incredible creatures. There's not a whole lot of creatures, but, I mean, Pan and then the slender skin man thing.
Yep, he's in there.
You know, are just so.
And there are a few other creatures that definitely have his signature on them.
I'm just saying, it's by no means like when you watch Hellboy or Hellboy 2, and it's just a world of all these creatures. Yes. You know, there's not a whole lot of the creatures, but they're just so amazing to see and whatnot. So we definitely recommend it. It's a dark movie, but it's so intriguing. So definitely on our list of a pick of the week. Now, Corey, did you have any other picks of the week that you wanted to throw into the mix?
Well, there are two that kind of popped in my head. One was Blade 2, which, as far as the Blade trilogy goes, I think it's my least favorite of the three movies. But, you know, you do have Del Toro, and you do also have Ron Perlman in that one. And even though it's not my favorite Blade movie, I do love Ron Perlman's character in that movie.
Right.
And his portrayal of that character. So it was another good pairing with them. But also...
Is that the one that they're like in the sewers or something?
Yeah, it takes place a lot down there and so forth. Underground world of these.
I feel like Guillermo del Toro lives the underground world or something. I don't know.
Did he come from an underground world?
I doubt that, but he's...
You know, he's always wearing these weird, shady specs. It just makes you wonder, are he's hiding some eyes or something here? But a more recent movie is the Pacific Rim.
Right.
Which is another wonderful eye candy. I mean, now you do have some big creatures, but you know, you also have these big mechanical monstrosities built by humans that also, I guess, kind of carry his newer signature as well. And of course, a really interesting appearance with Ron Perlman again. So definitely these people got some kind of a friendship going on here, but it's a very good friendship that you know, movie viewers just benefit from, of course.
I imagine if you're a director and, you know, you come across an actor or actress that you just click with, then you just kind of keep on wanting to work with that person. Or like we always see with Steven Spielberg and John Williams.
Yep.
Yeah. So Steven Spielberg and John Williams, I mean, that collaboration effort is monumental. And
or you got Christopher Nolan and you watched Inception and you got half of the cast from the Dark Knight series, you know.
Yeah. They always kind of... fill in the space there. So yeah, so those are two, well, I guess three good Guillermo del Toro picks. We did see like Shape of Water a couple years ago. I know it got Best Picture. I'm not sure if I totally agreed with it getting Best Picture, but it is a beautiful movie. It's kind of, again, going back, and it takes place in that, I forgot what time period it's really taking place, but I guess... I feel like it was more like in the 60s.
Yeah, I was thinking more Cold War era, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. However, I think, again, with Guillermo del Toro, so much of what he does has this signature vintage feel at times. You know, whether it was really in the 60s, there were parts of it that probably felt more 40s looking, like when you looked in their apartment and stuff.
Yeah.
Minus the TV part. Each character in that film definitely has a very interesting personality. The main creature, of course, is the water creature, which is, we think, a distant relative, perhaps.
Very ape-sapien-like, but not the same character. Just saying.
Maybe he's, like, in charge of Abe, because he definitely had some extra abilities, I think. So it's a really engaging film to watch. The plot is just bizarre and, you know, okay. We just have to say okay sometimes on what they're doing. But definitely very pretty. And I love the fact that we watched that and then we watched the Paddington movie and we're like, they totally took this from Paddington. So if you watch Shape of Water, then you have to watch Paddington to see what we're talking
about. And another awesome evil performance by Michael Shannon.
Oh, yeah. Michael Shannon, he's a great actor. He's so much fun. And
well, I'd say he's a great villain. I don't think I can think of a movie where he's played a good guy.
Well, there was that one movie we saw where he's like trying to save his son or something.
Yeah, but he goes through bad extremes to do so. So I will not call him a good person in that movie.
But yeah, he definitely makes... He's a great bad guy. I think I liked him as Zod in which Superman was that one? Was that
Man of Steel?
Man of Steel. Yeah. Okay. I think he first popped on our radar with Premium Rush, the bicycle movie.
Yes.
Which is kind of it's a weird movie. It's like a movie that takes place in 20 minutes, almost like Vantage Point. It's like probably like 20 minutes worth of movie. Well, not really. I mean, they go back in time. I guess it's more like Memento. Sorry. It's more like Memento in a sense where you kind of keep on going back and finding out more of the story. I find him intriguing. I do. If he's in a movie, I would definitely be interested in seeing that movie. He was an excellent villain in Shape of Water.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he gives 110% in his performance, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, he just, whatever character he's given, he just delves into that character and just gives it his all.
It's time for Coming Soon. So when we saw Hellboy, there were some previews that came out, and I think it was funny because they were like two back-to-back Dave Bautista films, which was kind of crazy and bizarre. So there were a lot of trailers.
Yeah, we're not even going to touch on all of them because there were a lot of them for this movie.
We're going to touch on a lot of them, though, it looks like. So I feel like of the whole group, there was one in particular that you're super, super excited about, which is Brightburn.
Well, I mean, there are several I'm excited for, but Brightburn has a very interesting story premise. So right. Brightburn takes the story of, you know, the similar beginnings of Superman. You have a alien boy from a, you know, another world crashes on Earth. And from what we can tell from the trailer, it has all the abilities of Superman. But what if this boy was bad?
Yeah.
And now you have a very dark.
So it's like the Superman meets the Omen.
So Damien is from another planet, has Superman's abilities.
Yeah.
So, yeah, super creepy.
So it definitely looks interesting. When we were watching the trailer, it's directed by James Gunn. So, of course, we loved what he did with Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. So I imagine, it, you know, special effects are going to look great. Hopefully the plot holds true and is great as well.
But it's his spin on a horror movie, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so. It seems very terrifying. So I know you have reservations for the next one. I am definitely intrigued for it, though, which is Joker.
Oh, we are touched on this one. Okay.
Yeah, but that's all we were going to touch on. Just the fact that you are a little unsure. I find it very interesting. It's very dark. But I know that people have compared it to some flavor of Scorsese films, like Taxi Driver and things like that. We'll see what comes of it. I'm looking forward to seeing more trailers to learn a little bit more of what the plot might really be. Right now, we've only seen a bunch of, like, a hodgepodge of things. So I know it has the creepy lady from American Horror Story, so I'm not sure how I feel about that. But
well, you know, in the DC universe, you know, every time there has been different portrayals of the Joker, you've never seen him have any mommy issues. And it seems like they're bringing in some mommy issues on this one. I'm not sure. But it's like, really? We're going now? We're going there now with this character? We're going to introduce some psycho here? Is that what we're doing?
Who knows? But Joaquin Phoenix, he definitely, he's lost a lot of weight for the film, it looks like. And, you know, I think he's... You see glimpses of him kind of at some point kind of putting on that mantle of the Joker.
Whereas the Joker has always been portrayed as very, very thin and sinewy, so.
Yeah. So, but there's times where, he's like wearing this suit and he's, you know, well, I can see it. I can definitely see it. But it definitely looks like we're going from the weird, awkward guy route. Or not. He just has this awkwardness to him and we'll see what really envelops or develops from that thought.
Yeah. And we'll leave it at that.
All right. So the next two movies that we're going to talk about, I thought was funny because they were shown back to back and they have the same
main actor.
Yeah. So Dave Bautista, he's got two movies coming out.
We, of course, know him from as
Drax.
Drax the Destroyer from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that's what we best know him from, which I do think is funny because we were just talking about James Gunn. And, of course, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
So anyway, so the first one is called My Spy. And this definitely looks like more of a lighthearted. Actually, they're both fairly lighthearted. Yeah. But definitely a bit of more of a lighthearted. He's paired up with a little girl. Almost has that game plan kind of feel, although it has nothing to do with sports. He seems to be, he's like a spy. And she, I forgot why he gets paired up with her.
I would imagine that she blackmails him into doing it somehow.
Well, but he got paired up with them, I thought, as part of his mission. And somehow she's like, well, I want to learn how to be a spy. And so much of the trailer is him kind of giving her some tips. And she's, of course, mastering all of them. But you also see in the trailer that he starts to kind of stick up for her on certain things. And
of course,
you know, she starts to see his softer side come out. So, you know, they just develop that kind of that almost like that father-daughter-esque relationship. So we'll see. It looks like it'll be fun.
It does.
Some sweet moments with it. The next one, I feel like they almost got inspired by Deadpool, but it's called Stuber. It stars the guy from The Big Sick.
And I think we were first introduced him from the TV show Franklin and Bash.
We love that TV show. It didn't last very
long. It was like the research guy. He could like find anything.
The research guy that was also a germaphobe. Yeah. He never wanted to go anywhere.
And I was, what's the phobe of like just being outside in public? Like xenophobe or something like that?
Oh, I can't remember.
Okay. Several phobias, it seems like.
I think his name is Kumail Nanjiani.
Okay.
Him, and he is the Uber driver named Stu, so it's his Stuber.
Yes.
And Dave Bautista, I don't know why, but he calls an Uber to take him essentially to Compton.
I'm assuming that for some reason he does not have a driver's license.
Yeah, either he doesn't have a license or he doesn't have a car. I don't know.
Or he just can't drive at all.
And so he gets in an Uber, and it looks like they're kind of paired up, at least for the day.
And it seems like that he's like your typical over-the-top, Dirty Harry type detective who just...
Probably acts first, thinks later kind of yes. thing.
Shoot first, ask questions later.
Yeah. So it definitely just looks like lots of fun and jokes, and it should just be a lot of fun.
So everywhere that the detective has to go, he has to take him there.
Yeah.
The Uber driver.
Yes. All right, and so the last movie we want to talk about is called Anna, and this looks like if you had an almost like a origin story for, maybe not really origin story, but almost like a Black Widow mixed with Atomic Blonde, as you put it.
Yes, definitely.
Female, fatale, spy kind of film. Maybe you can even put Veronica Salt in there. I don't know. You could throw her in there. Because that was an excellent one, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, this one...
Which one we're still eagerly waiting a sequel for, which is seemed like is never going to happen? I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't know we were waiting. But this one, it looks like it stars... I think her name was Sasha Luce. I'm not sure. I think in the film, it looks like that she's like a model, but she's really a spy. And it's also got... some great other actors in it. Helen Mirren almost looks like she might be like her handler or something. And then Cillian Murphy. And then Luke Evans is also in it.
Yes.
So ultimate plot, I'm not sure what's going on other than she's kind of getting, you know, of course, these missions to go on. And we'll see what really happens.
Lots of eye candy action sequences.
Yeah. Some great fight scenes that we saw just in the preview alone.
Yeah.
So it definitely looks interesting. So we'll definitely keep it on the radar. All right, Corey, it is now time for a side of bacon.
Okay, yeah, my bacon this week's a little burnt.
Burnt, but you usually like burnt.
I like, I like extra crispy, okay. Not burnt. There is a difference.
So this week definitely had a bit of a challenge, with this one. If you guys remember our last episode, my dad joined in the bacon suggestions, and he gave us Robert Mitchum.
Yeah, we may never let him pick again.
Oh, I don't know about that. it definitely proved to be a challenge. But we have Robert Mitchum to Denzel Washington. And I was able to get in three movies.
I will admit, I will not reveal my source, but I did have to majorly cheat.
Yeah, you just flat out cheated.
But, but at least found a cheat using movies and linking actors that I am aware of. So it's not like, you know, I'm naming these movies and actors that I just have no idea just to make a short link. But
even though you don't remember one of them in the movie.
Correct.
So, Mr. Cheater, share your
bacon. So I will admit I'm going to toss the win up to you, even though that I'm doing a two-movie link, but you know, I totally flat out cheated to get this. So I will admit that up front. I doubt that you cheated.
I did have to look up some actors.
Which is fine. Yeah, I don't consider IMDb cheating, you know, because sometimes you just need to refresh, you know, who's in what. But the linking actress that I use is Karen Allen.
Karen Allen?
Yeah, Karen Allen. Almost forgot her name. But yeah, I'm a fan of her. She's in a lot of movies I like. And Karen Allen was in both. Well, I got to remind myself what Scrooged. Mm-hmm. Which has Robert Mitchum in it.
Yes.
And she was also in Malcolm X with Denzel Washington.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I can't place her in that. I would have to rewatch the
It's been a really long time since I've seen
it. I do place her in Scrooge because she's one of the key.
Oh, yeah, she's like, one of the main actresses, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so mine I got in three movies. And the first one is Robert Mitchum to Robert De Niro in Cape Fear, of course, the 90s Cape Fear.
The remake.
Which, of course, is kind of fun because Robert Mitchum was in the original Cape Fear.
As the dad?
Yeah, he was the dad. Okay. And the new one, he's the cop. And detective Robert De Niro. Or something. Yeah, he's the detective. And Robert De Niro is the bad guy, and he's a horrible and very, very bad guy. So he plays the bad guy very well, I guess, is the outcome of
that. Well, he's a very good actor, regardless of what put him in. So let's just put that out there.
And what I had to do is actually I needed to kind of refresh my memory on some Robert De Niro movies, because I was like, because he's been in so many. Yeah. I was well, there has to be a way to quickly get him to Denzel. And I couldn't think of one that they've been in together. But I was reminded of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Because he plays Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that. I need to see that one myself. That
one, I know it was a hit or miss with lots of people. For whatever reason, I liked it. I tend to, for whatever reason, really like the Frankenstein story. I remember reading it in college, this movie came out before I'd gotten to college. It's Kenneth Branagh, and I think sometimes Kenneth Branagh is a hit or miss with many people. But anyway, so Kenneth Branagh plays Frankenstein, like Dr. Victor Frankenstein. And he's in there with Robert De Niro. And then Kenneth Branagh did Much Ado About Nothing, a movie I adore, with Denzel Washington.
Which, I'm not sure if I've seen it. It may be one that you tried to show me. I may have fell asleep in
it. No, I don't think I've actually tried to show it to you. You just have always said you didn't have a desire to see it. But it's an amazing cast, because it's Denzel, Emma Thompson, Kenneth Branagh, Keanu Reeves, Michael Keaton. Great cast. And it's just a lot of fun. It's a fun Shakespeare story. So anyway, so there you go. Three movies, all of which are good movies, or at least in my head, good movies, and all of which are actors that we know and love. So for this episode's Bacon Picks, I am going to go with Joaquin Phoenix. You're thinking about him from the Joker,
movie.
Trailer, okay. And I enjoy him as an actor anyway. So
he's in a lot of our favorite movies, of my favorite movies. Yeah. So.
Definitely Walk the Line. That's definitely one of your favorites. So who's your pick for the week?
Well, he's one of my favorite actors. And I think this is the first podcast where we even talked about this guy at all. And so we seem to have mentioned him several times. So I'm going to go with Ron Perlman.
Mm-hmm. Ron Perlman. I mean, oh my goodness. This guy, I guess because he's always kind of this, usually a character kind of.
Yeah, I mean, he may be in a lot of movies you're not aware of because he's dressed up as some kind of a creature.
Yeah, so it just feels he never ages, I guess what I was going to start to say.
Hellboy, Star Trek, and there's a
way back to Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, the TV show Beauty and the Beast, Being and the Beast, which he did an awesome job on doing.
Yeah, so, and he's still, I think, doing a bunch of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I happened to look him up on IMDb, and there are movies that are, being announced that you haven't even started filming yet that he's going to be in. So, he's still cranking them out.
He's a busy guy. All right,
he's not that young anymore, from what I can tell. But, he's.
So we have Joaquin Phoenix to Ron Perlman. Well, thanks for listening to Movie Shelf.
And if you would, if you're listening on your Apple device, please like us and share us with your friends and leave us a comment to let us know how we're doing and how you like our podcast.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. We'll catch you next time, you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.